I think he saw a chance for the United States to help Vietnam. I think he certainly saw a lot of destruction and devastation over that country when he was a prisoner there.
A senior U.S. statesman with ties to Vietnam has died. It's Monday, August 27th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Be sure to join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Indonesia jails a Chinese woman on blasphemy charges. Improved cooking for Rohingya refugees. Remnants of a U.S.-Japanese battle and building online political support. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Senator John McCain is being remembered for his courage, patriotism, and service to his country. McCain died Saturday at age 81 after a battle with brain cancer. The son of a U.S. admiral, McCain became a Navy aviator and flew bombing missions during the Vietnam War. Shot down and captured by the North Vietnamese in 1967, he endured more than 5 years of torture and deprivation as a prisoner of war. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Alvin Townley, the author of Defiant. In that book, Townley described his visits to the prison, nicknamed the Hanoi Hilton, where McCain and his fellow prisoners were incarcerated.
The goal of the North Vietnamese was to get intelligence and propaganda statements from these POWs. And for a while, they would have long interrogation sessions and raise their voice and get a little rough with the POWs. And at some point, though, we don't know exactly what happened, but the government decided they needed more propaganda, more statements and more intelligence more quickly. And so the North Vietnamese began really putting the American prisoners through torture, and they used ropes and other means of coercing American POWs to talk and to sign confessions, and they would break these POWs who had such a strong resolve not to break. And this was these are all fighter pilots, like John McCain. He's a fighter pilot, and fighter pilots hate to lose, and they are control freaks, and they love to be in control of their world. And all of a sudden in prison, they found they were in control of almost nothing, but one of the last things they could control was what came out of their mouth. And so, for them to, record a confession or give up intelligence and lose control of what they said, that was kind of the ultimate humiliation for those guys. And when John McCain was shot down and captured, quickly the North Vietnamese realized that he was the son of the commander of the Pacific Forces. So his father was an admiral. And they thought that, well, they might win some PR points by sending home the admiral's son. And so they offered John McCain the chance to go home early. He refused. And then they really tried to put pressure on him, and really use some rough means to try and get him to go home. But he would not go home despite being in terrible physical condition. I think certainly he probably could have made the argument that if he didn't go home, he might die from his injuries. But he still stuck it out. And so, I think regardless of politics or anything else, the POWs and members of the military community have always really respected John McCain for that action.
What led, in your mind anyway, and from your investigation and from your research, from that point where there probably should have been and probably have been high levels of anger among those who were being imprisoned, to the time that McCain then decided he wanted some kind of rapprochement, wanted some kind of reconciliation between Vietnam and the United States?
It was about a little over 10 years before John McCain went back to Vietnam, but he went back in 1985, I believe. And that was a decade before we restored official relations with Vietnam. And I think that he saw a country that needed American help. I think strategically he saw a country on the border of China that needed to that we should be allied with. And but I think he saw a chance for the United States to help Vietnam. I think he certainly saw a lot of destruction and devastation over that country when he was a prisoner there. And he realized that it was time to move on. John McCain has always been really good about putting bad things in the past and moving forward with, politically or with the war. And so I think he was, one of the leaders. And I think the men that were POWs in Hanoi had a unique perspective and I think a unique ability to help reconcile our two countries. And I think they've done a wonderful job of that. And I think it's been beneficial for the United States. And certainly from what I've seen there on the ground, the people of Hanoi as well.
Was McCain the driving force between this, or were a lot of other people involved as well?
John McCain's a leader, has been a leader in everything he's done. He has a vision, he has an idea, and he has an amazing ability to be persistent and see his vision played out. So I think he was always a driver in this. I think President Clinton saw the value there, and subsequently President Bush and Obama, I think, have continued to restore our relationships with Vietnam, which both in trade and security, I think has been a smart thing and a positive development.
In your mind, what do we lose with his passing, McCain's?
We lose a hero. I think we lose someone serving in Congress who has been through the ringer. You know, we lose these people that have really put themselves on the line in an extraordinary way. And so when they talk about sacrifice, when they talk about the ideals that make America great, you know, they believe it, they've lived it, they have put themselves out there, they have all bled for this country. And when they speak, people listen. And I think when we lose that, you have people that may not have the same deep-seated feel for the values of this country, the virtues of this country, and being willing to live out those values. I think John McCain has also been a voice of reason and moderation and cooperation and statesmanship. And, you know, he certainly has never shied away from letting his opinions be known. There are lots of people that agree with him one day and disagree with him the next, but he's always been able to maintain dialogue across the aisle and have discussions and learn from people with different perspectives. And certainly that began back in Hanoi when he was, you know, learning from North Vietnamese people about their perspectives on life and the war. And he may not have agreed with them, and they were torturing him and they were keeping him imprisoned. But I think he was still learning, and I think he was still willing to you know, have dialogues and try and see different points of view that might have been different than his own. I think that's something American politics desperately needs now, and I hope that whoever steps into his shoes as a senator, and whoever comes into the Senate from whatever state, can learn from his example and bring some of those values of civility to American politics.
Alvin Townley, the author of Defiant, the American POWs who endured Hanoi's most infamous prison, the women who fought for them, and the one who never returned. He spoke with VOA Asia's Ira Melman via Skype. McCain's body will lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda in Washington, as well as in the capital of his home state, Phoenix. A full-dress funeral is planned at the Washington National Cathedral, and his burial will be in Annapolis, Maryland, where he graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. New Australian Prime Minister faces challenge of uniting fractured government. Australian Foreign Minister Julie Bishop leaves cabinet. A year after fleeing Myanmar, Rohingya demand justice. Japanese Prime Minister Abe seen headed for extended term despite flat ratings. Deadly fire breaks out in Chinese hotel. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also visit our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. An ethnic Chinese Buddhist woman has been sentenced to 18 months in prison under Indonesia's blasphemy laws after she complained back in 2016 about a mosque's loud daily calls to prayer near her house in North Sumatra. 45-year-old May Liana's lawyer plans to appeal. The court said the woman's complaint triggered riots that resulted in the ransacking of Buddhist temples by Muslim mobs. The rights group Amnesty International called for a reversal of this injustice and Meliana's immediate and unconditional release. Peter McCauley is an author and economist and heads the Indonesia Project at the Australian National University. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty this is a case when a local matter is suddenly magnified because it is seen as a violation of the country's constitutional guarantees of freedom of speech and religion.
This has to be seen as a local issue. It often reflects tension at the local level in a community. It looks as if they there has been some tension between Islamic groups and Chinese Buddhist groups. And it's an issue that has blown up. The issue is about the excessive noise from the mosques. That's an issue that is a constant issue in Indonesia. Many people, including Muslims, object to the call to prayer from mosques that is too loud and too frequent. And in this case, it seems to have blown up and has unfortunately gone to court. And now there is an issue as to whether or not the person charged is subject to blasphemy.
Her lawyer says she will appeal, but activists have said that the country's blasphemy laws are being used to bully minorities and violate religious freedom. Do you subscribe to that?
It's hard to tell. It is true that Islamic groups have been more active in recent years. There was a famous case a couple of years ago where the mayor of Jakarta, a fairly popular mayor of Jakarta, who was also Chinese, whose local name, everyone knew him by the name of Ahok. Ahok made some rather tough comments, and they were interpreted as blasphemy, and Islamic groups became extremely militant, and in the end forced Ahok both from office and indeed got him convicted. He is now in jail. That is most unfortunate. It certainly seems to have national political implications, because just a little over a week ago, the Indonesian president, who is widely known as Jokowi, that's a nickname, made a fairly conservative selection for a man to be his running mate as vice president in the presidential elections due next year. And this is widely interpreted as Jokowi being seen to be under pressure to give ground, as it were, to conservative Islamic groups.
Apparently, there are some mosques in Indonesia that go beyond just playing the azan or call to prayer, but many also play lengthy versions of prayers or sermons that last over half an hour, and there are efforts by the government to try to rein that in.
And as I say, it is fairly widely agreed, including amongst Muslims, that the noise is excessive. The current vice president of Indonesia, whose name is Yusuf Kalla, and he is a Muslim, and he has in the past appealed to Islamic groups. He has chosen his words carefully. He has asked them to use their loudspeakers wisely.
Another incident last week involved a Facebook video of a parade in East Java in which young children were dressed in black and seen marching with mock weapons. In May, a Muslim couple and their three children blew themselves up during an attack on a police station in the Javanese port city of Surabaya. Authorities are searching for the person responsible for uploading the video, saying he misrepresented the purpose of the parade. Happening now in Asia, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe announced Sunday his candidacy for a ruling Liberal Democratic Party leadership election that he's expected to win despite flat ratings and low expectations for his economic policies. The expected victory would make him Japan's longest-serving premier. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's Monday. We're starting out a new week together on VOA Asia. UN agencies and the Bangladesh government have begun distributing liquid petroleum gas stoves in Cox's Bazar to help prevent further deforestation, which has been accelerating with the huge influx of Rohingya refugees during the past year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Cox's Bazar is home to large areas of protected forest and an important wildlife habitat. The arrival of more than 700,000 Rohingya refugees fleeing violence and persecution in Myanmar has put enormous pressure on these precious resources. UN Migration Agency spokesman Paul Dillon tells VOA the refugees have been cutting down the trees and clearing land to build makeshift shelters. He says they and many local villagers also rely almost exclusively on firewood to cook their meals.
Consequently, the forests in that area are being denuded at the rate of roughly 4 football fields every single day. We're told by the experts at this rate, by 2019, there will be no further forests in that area.
Scientists note deforestation has devastating consequences for the environment, leading to soil erosion, fewer crops, increased flooding, and most significantly, the loss of habitat for millions of species. Dillon says disappearing forests are putting great pressure on the animals in the region.
It interrupts migration pathways and regrettably forces these sort of artificial confrontations between animals in the wild and communities as they move into areas that have been logged out, oftentimes in search of arable farmland and that type of thing.
The project aims to distribute liquid petroleum gas stoves and gas cylinders to around 250,000 families over the coming months. UN agencies say the stoves will have additional benefits besides helping to prevent deforestation. For example, they note smoke from firewood burned in homes and shelters without proper ventilation causes many health problems, especially among women and children who spend much of their time indoors. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, an Australian court intervenes for a young refugee. You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This news from VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the United States will continue to hold accountable those responsible for what he described as the abhorrent ethnic cleansing of Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. Pompeo's statement came on the one-year anniversary of the conflict that drove more than 700,000 Rohingya from their homes into neighboring Bangladesh. More on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a court has ordered the removal of a girl held in an Australian-run refugee camp in the South Pacific because she is suffering from, quote, resignation syndrome. The child is refusing all food and water as a succession of critically ill youngsters are brought from the island of Nauru. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Medical experts and refugee advocates say there's a mounting health crisis among children held at Australia's offshore detention centres on Nauru. A court has ordered that a 12-year-old girl be airlifted off the island for treatment in Australia after she reportedly tried to set herself on fire. Another young refugee is critically ill after refusing food, drink and medical treatment. Campaigners say children are suffering from a trauma-related psychological disorder known as resignation syndrome. Sources say the situation on the tiny South Pacific island is dangerously chaotic. In Canberra, an Australian government spokesman says service providers are contracted to deliver age-appropriate health, education and cultural care to children on Nauru. But Dr. Barry Fatterford from Doctors for Refugees, an advocacy group, says more action is urgently needed.
The children on Nauru are pre-adolescents. They're 6, 7, 8, 10. And when you see a 10, 12-year-old attempt to take their own life, like this most recent case with this 12-year-old girl, her attempt to set herself on fire was witnessed, apparently, by other children. So what kind of effect do you think that's going to have on those developing children?
Nauru is Australia's last remaining offshore processing camp for asylum seekers intercepted at sea. Canberra says the facility is a deterrent and has stopped people from risking their lives trying to reach Australia by boat. Detainees are told they have no chance of being resettled in Australia. Nauru was first used as an offshore camp in 2001 when a Norwegian freighter had rescued more than 400 mainly Afghan Hazara refugees in international waters north of Australia. Canberra refused to accept them and sent them instead to the new processing facility in Nauru. It was closed in 2007 but was reopened in 2012. Another South Pacific camp on Manus Island in Papua New Guinea, sponsored by Australia, was officially closed last year. Hundreds of asylum seekers and refugees remain in PNG. While Australia refuses to resettle them, some have been granted entry to the United States. Conditions in the facilities have been consistently condemned by rights groups. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea says the U.S. decision to call off a trip to North Korea by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is unfortunate, but says it's most important for the allies to pursue substantial progress on denuclearization. President Donald Trump directed the delay because of what he called a lack of progress on nuclear disarmament talks with the North. Details are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, scientists have used multi-beam sonar and a remotely operated craft to locate the remains of the USS Abner Reed, which was sunk nearly 75 years ago after hitting a Japanese mine off of Alaska's Aleutian Islands. The ship had been sent to look for Japanese submarines following the only World War II battle to be fought on North American soil. VOA's Jill Craig has more.
The USS Abner Reed was looking for Japanese submarines following a battle on Attu Island in May 1943 when it hit a mine.
So then this happened about 2 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden surprised everybody. We thought we were pretty safe.
The resulting blast killed 71 men. 94-year-old Darrell Weathers is one of the few survivors.
Well, I didn't have time to be terrified. I didn't know what to be terrified of. You know, this is an explosion in the middle of the night up in the other end of the world.
The battle on Attu Island, one of Alaska's Aleutian Islands, was the only World War II battle fought on North American soil. Nearly 75 years later, scientists use multi-beam sonar to discover the 23-meter stern about 88 meters below the Bering Sea.
We used basically the state-of-the-art sensors and sonars and vehicles to go out and image, and in today's world, it's quite capable, and we found the Abner Reed within 3 to 4 hours of starting the survey.
The discovery was confirmed by a remotely operated craft, which beamed high-definition video in real time to the research ship.
And that's ultimately what it comes down to. That's the most motivating part of our job, is to find and realize that in our work, we have discovered 71 lost souls that, to a certain extent, were forgotten about up until 2018.
To honor the deceased, those aboard the research ship held a wreath-laying ceremony, hoping their mission will also bring some closure to the families. Jill Craig, VOA News, Washington.
Grassroots organizing is the key to building a movement, and much of it today is done online. French President Emmanuel Macron built a winning majority in the French National Assembly with the help of digital tools from U.S. company Nation Builder. Mike O'Sullivan reports that politicians and nonprofit groups are turning to technology to build support.
Emmanuel Macron stunned the world when elected last year as president of France under the banner of a new party. Once elected, some of the online tools he used to build a legislative majority in the National Assembly came from Nation Builder, headquartered in Los Angeles.
Macron ended up using us to field his entire government, so to run his legislative elections. So there's people all over the world in 112 countries, political parties and political candidates, nonprofit organizations, small businesses, large businesses.
Anyone who wants to mobilize support or spread a political message. Other companies or groups also provide online tools for activists. Nation Builder says it attracts people across the political spectrum, including Republicans in Maryland and the leader of Canada's New Democratic Party. The debate surrounding Brexit, the 2016 vote to withdraw Britain from the European Union, spurred activists on the Remain side to target supporters using Nation Builder. Promoting a cause or building a movement, it is all about people, but the digital tools to connect them can be found today online. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're starting your week out with us, and we'd love to hear how it's going. Write to us. There are many ways to contact us. You can send us an email. voaasia@voanews.com is our address. You can also get in touch with us via Facebook. VOA Asia Facebook is a great place to send a message. You can hear us on the radio throughout Asia. One great radio station is Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore. Thanks to everyone there who tuned in today. And as always, our thanks go out to Director Tracy Carter, our engineer Greg Burns, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. Have a great day.